Welcome back to the Inside Show podcast, episode 412. I hope you're all enjoying your time being stuck inside and not going too stir crazy yet. This is, the second episode that we've recorded since the world has started falling apart and everybody's been told to stay inside? Or, I mean, I guess we were kind of at the precipice of it last time, yeah. And then shit got real over the last couple of weeks.
Well, in our country, anyway.
Right. Yeah, for us, shit got more real. I will say, though, so far, I'm largely unaffected by it, which I feel very fortunate about. Obviously, many people have it far worse than I do. But I live remote enough and see few enough people that my daily routine has not changed. Like, the only real difference is my wife is home more in the morning now because she has to work from home, obviously.
Right.
But because I work only with family who I would have already seen and infected at this point in time, and because I work 1 mile from my house, I'm still going into work and really not that much is different. We did talk to the town to make sure that it was okay when our governor said that, you know, non-essential businesses had to close. We checked with our, you know, the town and the police department, like, oh yeah, no, that's fine. You guys don't see anybody. It's no big deal. You can continue to do your thing. So like, I don't generally do the grocery shopping, though I did yesterday. well, I went with yesterday, but generally, like, I don't do most of those things that have me leaving the town. So I see all of my friends home, and obviously I'm paying attention to the news, but my daily routine is like no different.
That's, yeah, it's kind of crazy, right? Like, you don't realize how, maybe you did, but like, I always knew you lived in the quote unquote middle of nowhere and you're kind of isolated, but I never really thought about how. That's not true. I have thought about that in a fictitional sense of a zombie apocalypse. Like, if I could make it to your house early enough, you're backed against a lake, you have to get through the woods, and nobody's around there. That is where I'm going. Also, you have weapons.
Perfect sense. Right. It would not be a bad place to be. And it's proving to not be a bad place to be now either. But yeah, it is weird. I saw a funny meme about like, you don't realize how isolated your daily life is until the apocalypse comes and nothing changes. And I'm like, oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah, I would say obviously I'm working from home, but my department, especially my company, we had been designed to work from home. We were doing it a couple days a week and everything is digital. We have an electronic file room. We do everything on our computers. I've had my computer hooked up to my TV with my Bluetooth mouse and keyboard and been working that way. And I'm very fortunate, as is my wife, that we are working and can do so from home. So that's
right.
That's good. We understand we're possibly a minority in that. So, but this whole thing is, obviously it's affecting the industry. We have all, if you're keeping up with any, you should just kind of,
if you want to go to a concert, you're not.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of get it anyway, but as you read your metal news and stuff, like obviously all the tours are canceled and it's hurting the bands financially, not to mention the rest of the industry. But things are might start getting weird here, even on this show, depending on how long this goes. Nick mentioned to me this morning that Buried Tomorrow just pushed their album release. Enslaved pushed theirs to the fall, which was supposed to come out this spring. And another one, which we might not have reviewed because Nick doesn't care for the band, Hatebreed, according to Josta, delayed their album indefinitely was the word he used. Their tour of Parkway Drive, and I want to say Buried Tomorrow was actually on that. Don't quote me on that, though. Was obviously canceled, their U.S. tour. But he was, to quote Josta from his Twitter, I'm told retail and pressing plants in the EU and North America will be closing or are closed already, making manufacturing / pre-orders impossible. Our fans buy a lot of vinyl / CDs, so the label needs to protect their investment, understandably. It makes total sense.
Yep.
But the question is, it's going to be interesting to see is how many albums are going to get delayed. I mean, I feel like a lot of much more indie ones will just get released because their promotion is a bit different. Their investment's different. Obviously they're hurting too. I totally get that. But, I think maybe we'll be okay for most of April, but if this goes beyond that, we might be doing some really random reviews.
Yeah, and like I get it for, you know, the I guess larger bands as well, you know, beyond the physical medium is touring supports the release of new music. If you cannot go on that tour you were planning, it may not be the best time to drop an album. So you delay it, but we don't know when the tour cycles are going to pick up. And once that does happen, everybody's going to be trying to go on the road. So venues are going to be filling up,
right,
like with their calendars. So they're going to have to like figure out that whole new thing. Cause you know, anything booked for June or July right now, theoretically is still happening potentially.
Yeah.
Unless it's part of a huge tour, but you know, if you're like the Webster Theater and you have a band booked for July, they're probably still on the calendar. But then if everybody that canceled their February, March, April, and most likely May shows is trying to rebook, they're now fall at best because you have that summer lineup already, yep, you know, on the books. So if you were putting out an album in that time frame, it would make sense to delay it until you can tour. Right. So we might have a good release end of the year, which we generally are like, oh man, it's September, shit's getting lean. Well, it might like be finally picking up at that point.
Well, and you say at best because there's, I'm sure, I can't think of ones off the top of my head, but some fall tours scheduled already, and we've seen some rescheduled for the fall already. So you might be looking at next year, even like winter, right, or spring 2021. So it's gonna get crazy,
for sure.
To further Joss's statements, I read a tweet from Gilead Media this morning, which I have not been able to find where, like, to corroborate this, but they said, found out today that one of the country's largest record plating facilities is now closed indefinitely as well. So that furthers the whole pre-order and record pressing and stuff. Because, you know, I follow Waxworks and Mondo and Death Waltz and some of these, you know, soundtrack labels, and they're still putting out releases, obviously a little slower, but that's probably going to come to a crawl, if not an immediate stop. And then Indie Merch, who was doing a sale when this first started and stuff, and obviously all the bands are trying to say, go buy our merch, help us out. They can't ship at the moment because Ohio has a stay-at-home order, which is scheduled to end April 6th, but realistically could go longer. They're taking orders.
Right.
So now you can give the money and help the bands, but you're not getting the merch. Not that, you know, people need t-shirts immediately, but still, I mean, that's also,
it is weird.
It is weird. It's also just one spot. You know, it's just Indie Merch, which is a big one. But so it's going to get, things are going to get more real. On a more fun note, my co-host here had a birthday this past week. Happy birthday. You also share a birthday with Machine Head's The Blackening.
I wasn't aware.
That album turned 13. Yeah.
Damn.
13 already.
Wow.
And speaking of sharing weird birthdays, and Machine Head, so this actually connects better than I thought. The More Things Change turned 23 on, I think this was the 25th, which is also Jeff Walker's birthday of Carcass fame. And then 22 Years as Elder has the same birthday as Elton John.
Cool.
Totally random connection, but I'm going through Twitter, I'm like, oh, Elton John's birthday. Oh, Jeff Walker's birthday. Okay. Oh, the More Things Change's anniversary. This is a weird day.
Yeah, right? Very, very different things.
And did you notice Apple Music has a new playlist?
Yeah, for you? I did.
It's good. Yeah. I liked mine this
week. Yeah, it is.
So, those of you,
the Get Up list.
Yeah, the Get Up mix. It comes out on, it gets, it's a new one that updates on Mondays for those of you who use Apple Music but maybe didn't realize it or catch it. So Monday you're going to have your Get Up mix, and then Tuesday you have your Favorites mix. And I usually ignore the Chill mix.
Yeah, I never listen to Chill mix. Is it Friday is the new music one, which makes sense because music comes out on Fridays. Yeah.
So keep it busy if you don't want to listen to the same old stuff.
Yeah, not that we ever have a problem with that, as we do this show where we cover a shit ton of new music. So let's get into that. This week, we have mostly returning champions. We're doing four albums this week, because why not? And also, we have our new Black Label band, which, or Black Label, Which we'll get to in a little bit. But first, the big one that everybody's talking about is Code Orange with their album Underneath, out on Roadrunner. We have kind of a storied history with this band of really liking Code Orange Kids and then kind of going downhill from there while they try to find their identity of putting out a series of disjointed, unconnected releases. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say.
Yeah.
Generally, you have enjoyed them a bit more than I have, as they have kind of found themselves. And also, you enjoyed them live a lot more than I did. Yeah,
that's the bigger one, because I don't go listen to I Am King or Forever.
Right. Yeah, so we gave I Am King, you gave it a 3, I gave it a 2. And Forever, we were both 2s. So here we are a little while later with Underneath. My review is largely unchanged. I will say they have gotten fucking brutally heavy for the most part. And there is some very interesting stuff going on here. But it is my biggest complaint is how disjointed it is, which I think could have been my complaint about the last couple as well. There are moments I always like. Generally, the quieter, more ambient, haunting moments where I can't remember her name. Where the only girl in the band is doing the vocals. To me is a lot more interesting than the, like, let's just make it heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And this one works in a lot more industrial elements, a lot more, like, squeals and stutter stops and very intentional glitching and interesting production notes that are very akin to, like, some early Nine Inch Nails work, which makes perfect sense because they brought in Chris Renna from Nine Inch Nails to do a lot of the industrial tinge side of things that you get from this. Mm-hmm. So that does make perfect sense that they worked with him. But, like, I don't know. My biggest issue with this band is the attitude of the band, if that is fair. I'm going to read you a short little interview that they did with Kerrang, with the vocalist Jamie Morgan. Describing the album, he called it our most psychotic shit. Proudly, he also predicted that the band's forthcoming Coachella appearance, they would be the best band in the world, just like every day. Most presciently, he made a promise that claws its truth into you throughout Underneath's intense 3/4 of an hour. You can't point to it and say, that's not hard. It's some of the hardest shit there is, not just from us, period. And like, no, that's incorrect. And it's also not all great. There are, like, you could break this out into 2 or 3 different EPs, and you could say that about one of those 3. Like, the more industrial stuff is not the hardest shit there is by any means. And then there are 4 songs on here that sound like Spirit Box, but not as good. Where they're just kind of like the quiet, like, rock anthems. You know, you get a sliver, Ottoman Carbine, Underneath, Sulfur Surrounding to a degree, and The Easy Way are all, like, you know, that's 5 songs right there that are all, like, not very heavy at all. They have some industrial tinges to them. They have some interesting glitches. They have some weird production, but they're not super duper heavy. But then you get something like Swallowing the Rabbit Hole or most of In Fear that is, like, really, really fucking aggressive. And it doesn't flow. It's unpredictable. It keeps you on your toes, and I will definitely agree with that, because that is a sentiment that they go on to discuss later on in that interview. You can kind of never predict where it's coming from, but I don't know that that's a good thing. It doesn't make me want to go back and dive into it more. I feel like it's a less good version of I Wrestled a Bear Once mixed with, like, first album Slipknot. Like, That is my general takeaway on it, and I don't know that I need that. I don't know. It's, like, not super great. There are moments I enjoy, but they're all the lighter moments where they feel more cohesive and like a band. You know, the glitching and stuttering is cool once or twice, but when it becomes the end part of a riff that repeats and every time it gets there, they glitch and stutter out, it's like, okay, you rode on that too hard. Like, it's a bunch of cool concepts that they either drag on too long or don't dive into deep enough. And they find themselves in this weird liminal space that just kind of ends up sounding like, you know, 3 disjointed interspersed EPs. I don't know. I I might be over this band. I keep wanting to give them the benefit of the doubt because I really liked their first release back when they were Code Orange Kids. And they are definitely pushing boundaries and developing new stuff every time. It's just not really for me, I think, which is frustrating because, like, I have mentioned early Slipknot, I Wrestled a Bear Once, Spirit Box, and Nine Inch Nails all in this review, which are four bands I fucking love. And there's something about the conglomeration of it that does not connect. And that's why I said maybe it's just the attitude. Maybe it's the egos associated with it that I have a hard time dealing with, because on paper I should love this.
So it's funny because I wouldn't like that attitude either, except I haven't read anything from them, anything they said. I really liked this.
I'm not surprised.
I am, though. Like, I actually went into this going, I feel like we need to review this. So the only song I listened to first was Swallow the Rabbit Hole, which I surprisingly liked. So my interest was a little piqued. But prior to that song, I was like, it's Code Orange again. And, you know, when they were Code Orange Kids, they're still a young band, you know. And this is somehow as disjointed and glitchy as it is with the variety of influences, this is somehow a much more consistent, cohesive album than the last two. I feel like the last two were, like, it's weird to say, but you listen to the last two, they just were all over the place with no flow to it. This album at least flows in its own way. It has a flow. And while there is a wide variety of songs in there, from like a more industrial cold metal place to a harder Swallow the Rabbit Hole to the more melodic songs, each of those draw me back for its own reason. Like, there's a couple of those, especially the ones where Reba sings, are catchy. And they're choruses that they can get stuck in your head. Whereas, you know, Swallowing the Rabbit Hole, I know it's the beginning of the first one, but just the lead into the last breakdown is just like exactly what I want from the more hardcore side of things. And then you get the new metal groove and melodies in there, which I still enjoy. Obviously, we've discussed this numerous times. We both grew up on that. So I still think they have growth. There's room for them to grow, obviously, and make it even more cohesive and arguably better. But I think this is way better than the last two albums. It's something I wanted to listen to this week and didn't find myself forcing. I didn't force myself to listen to.
Yeah, I'll agree with half that sentence. I do find it better than the last two. I still didn't love it. It frustrated me to listen to. But there are, I mean, as I said, there are moments of it that I really enjoy. Like the disparate elements of it, there's Kyle's word, I really liked. But as a whole, I found it more frustrating than I found to be worth the time. I want to like this more than I do. I'm going to give it a 3 because I do think it's better than the last ones, and I gave both of those 2s. And I'm going to try to commit to going back to this and spending more time with it, because on paper I should really, really like it. But really, what it made me want to do every time I listened to it was go listen to one of those other four aforementioned bands that I enjoy the stuff better of. Frustrating, but okay. So 3 for me.
I'm giving it a 4, definitely.
Okay. All right. Well, we're going to play the song In Fear for you from Code Orange's Underneath. It's out now on Roadrunner. Check it out. Let us know what you think. We'll be right back.
So that was In Fear by Code Orange, again, off their latest album, Underneath. Let us know what you think about that one. A lot of people seem to be praising it. We're split here. Curious to know where you fall. Next up, we have a band that's new to us, but it's been around for a little bit, called Earth Rot. They put out a new album, Black Tides of Obscurity, out on Season of Mist, who, side note, is killing it, generally speaking. Right. They're what I used to love about Relapse. I still like a lot of Relapse bands, but that label has changed a lot over the years. And I feel Season of Mist has become more like they used to be.
So do you think we go in waves or labels go in waves? Because there was a time where Relapse was the shit. Then it was Prosthetic. For a very brief time, it was Sumerian for a very brief window there. And then we went through a period where, like, anything that was on Good Fight, we're like, this is the shit. And I would say 2020 so far, or end of 2019 into 2020, is definitely the era of Season of Mist. Like, I don't know if that's just, like, they happen to be putting out, like, a really good batch of bands and finding their groove, or if, like, we are just going through this flow of what we're wanting to listen to. But there is definitely some truth behind
it. It's definitely a bit of both. And I can say from Relapse standpoint, they got into a lot more psychedelic stuff and they were putting out some more like electronic-y things in the like Way of Zombie, who's been on there for a while. But they got less extreme. But then the extreme stuff they picked up, like Outer Heaven and I think that was them, and Genocide Pact, things of that nature, we were just like, it's too old school death. Like, we didn't like the production, whatever. Not us. Not our thing. Mm-hmm. Season of Mist has been getting a crop of bands, and then the bands they have putting out killer releases that we have liked. So I think it's definitely a bit of both. I think Season of Mist is going to be on this wave for a while. And to further that, with Earth Rot, this is the band's third album. They've been kicking around since 2013. this is the first for the label, actually. Their first two albums, Follow the Black Smoke and Renascentia, were both put out independently. They're a really strong blend of black and death metal, where I don't know if I could call it black and death metal. It's almost death into black metal. Not that that's a thing, but I said anyway.
Yeah, let's go with that.
But there's a bit of death and roll in there, and there's a couple, at least one spot in particular, they found this almost like bluesy rock groove, but it, you get some melodies and stuff like that throughout the album. It's almost like what I'd want Behemoth to be if they didn't become this epic cult band. Because I just, the blend of the two styles just spoke to me in a way where you get the evil of the black metal and some of the speed and raspy vocals, but then they fall into a death metal groove and crunch. The, you know, bit of a HM2 kind of sound there, which obviously speaks to me. And the way they just play back and forth on them, sometimes in the they play together very well. They go back and forth a bit. So where a lot of times we'll be like, oh, there's a black metal part, there's a death metal part. That's there, but there's enough of the combined. They did both, and that's what makes it work. You get a lot of variety in playing with their influences throughout the album. And I found this super enjoyable.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun to listen to. It does feel like half the band is very much so in the black metal camp and half the band is in the death metal camp, and they're just like picking and choosing and you know, fighting it out during writing sessions and ending up with what they get. Like, it feels like probably I would say the two guitar players are definitely more in the black metal camp and the rhythm section is in the death metal camp, because you get that groove, you get that bounce in the drums. It's not just straightforward, you know, black metal drumming. But with the HM2 production on the guitars and like that tone and the recording production sets you for a black metal album. But what you get is this underlying rhythm and, you know, progression that feels way more akin to a death metal album than a black metal album, which is kind of like the best of all worlds. Yeah. Like, you get that rawness that like can be really enjoyable from the right black metal album, but with this kind of groove and aggression to it that doesn't just wash over you. You know, it has like that headbanging moment that you want from a good death metal band. And it's a really good mix between the two. I did also just see, looking here at their Metallum page, their guitar player was in Xenobiotic.
Yeah, I just saw that. Yeah.
So that's
he was in there from 2014 to 2016. I just looked too.
So that's fun. Yeah, but no, you pretty much covered it. This was a lot of fun, a really good balance between the black metal and the death metal. Memorable songs, catchy. As you pointed out, there are a couple moments that kind of tip into a death and roll thing, but like not really.
Right.
I would have liked a few more of those moments, because that is the side of this production and style that I really get into.
Right.
Is when it kind of just tips a little further into that fun groove and bounce a little bit more. But that's nitpicking. This was a lot of fun. This is easily a 4 of an album for me.
Same here. And, you know, there's parts, even if you're not paying attention, it grabs you in. So, like, the beginning of Towards a Godless Shrine, it falls into this groovy death metal thing. That's what I was banging my head to. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's good. And then another part is this song we're going to play for you. The Cape of Storms, it's got a really fun bridge in it, something a little different even on this album, but this gives you a good representation of them. So check out the track from Earthrot's newest album, Black Tides of Obscurity.
We'll be right back.
That was the Cape of Storms from Earthra off their album Black Tides of Obscurity, out on Season of Mist. What you doing over there, Ryan?
Breaking shit, you know. Making as much extra noise as possible, because that's how podcasts work.
Perfect. That's what people love. All right. So next up, we have Neck of the Woods with their latest, The Annex of Ire, out on Plegic Records. So this is the third release from this band, and also the third time we've covered them. We did their EP back in, 2015? For some reason, I want to say 17, even though we just had this conversation. And then we did The Passenger afterwards, and now we have The Annex of Ire as their newest one. I continue to enjoy this. This is not a band that shows a shit ton of growth between releases, and I'm pretty okay with that. They walk this line between a kind of death metal, metalcore vibe, and a bit of a progressive nature. And that's something we talked about heavily on their first release of, particularly tying in with their absolutely stunning album artwork of being both extremely heavy, but bleak and also somehow a little bit beautiful. And that kind of carries on through this as well. You get very, very aggressive, heavy, mostly death metal stuff, but that falls into these grooves of, I guess probably more metalcore than death metal. I'd say yeah, let's reverse that. It rides more on the metalcore side of things, but hits a little bit of a death metal tinge. But every now and then, it just goes on to full-on progressive. The end of the title track, the last couple minutes of that is noodly bass solos and quiet ambient guitars and some acoustics worked in here and there. And it kind of comes in and out, but seamlessly. That is the nature of this band, is the ability to weave these kind of different elements together in a way that works extremely well and never feels jarring when they move on to a lighter passage and then bring it back into something really heavy again. And it's a really good balance and blend of that. But that's largely what they've been doing this whole time. So it's hard to say this is better or a step forward or more progressive or heavier. Like, it's kind of, it's another solid release from them. So if you've liked what they've done before and we've covered them, this is another good version of that. But I don't think it's, you know, breaking any new ground or mind-bogglingly different in any particular way. That said, I still really like it. This is a band I enjoy and I go back to not as much as I should. But every time I throw it on, I'm like, yeah, still really like this.
Yeah.
And I always like a bass solo. So
this is really good. It reminds me a lot of Misery Signals for some reason. I might have said this in past reviews. Somebody else is going to have to tell me, so I'm not going to go listen to it. But that stood out to me a lot more this time. It stood out vocally and musically. And that's a good thing. I mean, that was a – they were a good metalcore band that took on a little bit of progressive songwriting in there and bigger melodic – hooks without doing, you know, good cop, bad cop melody type things. Mm-hmm. And like you covered pretty much, I mean, this is more old school. I hate that I have to use that even with air quotes, but we don't come across, maybe because we're not trying, a lot of metalcore stuff, period, let alone in this vein. And I like that they're flying that flag and they do it very well. I feel like the production on this, while solid, definitely plays better to the progressive elements, especially the solos and noodly parts, which are – it brings out the melodies more. But the aggressive parts don't have as much – quite as much bite to it as if you listen to the last few. And I think that I just figured that out now, and it was something that stood out to me, but I couldn't pinpoint what it was. It's not a huge sticking point, but there are some really aggressive moments on here. But if you compare it to the sound of the last two, they would have stood out more on those albums. But that said, you know, for a band their, you know, size and scope and being signed to a more progressive or stranger, if you will, label like Pelagic, it makes sense. And this band's a good fit there too. They're of what they're riding. So yeah, this is another solid effort from Neck of the Woods, a band that someday they're going to write something epic and it's going to blow up. It's there. It's in them. We're just waiting for it.
Yeah, so I'm landing on another 4, which is, I think, what I pretty much always land on for these guys. Okay, cool. So with that, we're going to play the song Skin Your Teeth from Neck of the Woods' latest, The Annex of Ire. Check it out. We'll be right back.
So that was Skin Your Teeth by Neck of the Woods off their latest album, The Annex of Ire. It's out now on Pelagic Records. And that will take us to our Black Label feature for the month. And this month, we decided to dive into 20 Bucks Spin. Now, they're a band pretty much any self-respecting metalhead probably knows, or should know. We've talked about them recently with Tombold and Spirit Adrift and Chemist, to name a few. They put out Noisem's latest album and Immortal Bird. So we've actually mentioned them quite a...
We've done a fair amount of 20 Bucks Spin
last couple of years. So, but what we realized is we only really knew their big stuff. So we decided to dive into some stuff we may not know and look a little deeper into the label. The label was started by Dave Adelson back in 2005, so celebrating 15 years this year. And it was started in San Francisco, though a few years back they moved up to Olympia, Washington, which is strange. Which is also strange because I guess I was looking at the wrong things. I just said to Nick, this says that must be old news because their Facebook – well, that was an interview from 2015 I picked that up from. And then I'm looking at their Bandcamp page. It says Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania.
Okay.
So they've been moving around, it looks like. I hate to admit this, but I have to sound less like an idiot. We had a hard time finding information about this label.
Yeah, this seemed like a obvious good grab. I just looked this up. We've covered 7 albums by them over the past few
years. Which is not as big as some other labels, but it's a decent amount.
Right. Yeah, and we've enjoyed all of those. So it seemed like a pretty obvious label for us to do a little bit more of a deep dive on. And while there's plenty of music to listen to, like, we like to do a little bit of like a history lesson on, you know, the people who founded it and what their general nature is for how they look at bands and who they sign and, you know, just the kind of operating ethos of the labels we've been covering to this point. And there is kind of fuck all out there on 20 Bucks Spin.
Yeah.
So this is a very uneducated rambling segment to say that they have a lot of bands. You should listen to some
of them. So we'll try to find more info for next week. I found an interview from 2015, as I referenced, that was done by ninecircles.co. And the 2008 interview by Decibel, which the label is 3 years old at that point. Before I give a little insight into the label from the interview, they have quite a wide variety of signings, and definitely more so than the last couple we've done. Where even from what I just said of bands we covered, from Tombold to Spirit Adrift, I mean, you can take that from Cerebral Rot to Magic Circle. The names alone
you an idea.
It's Cerebral Rot, solid death, old school death doom. And when they do death metal, this label, they tend to go old school. I will say personally, there's a lot of death metal on here, or whether it's mid-paced or just old school, I can get on board musically. And some of the vocals just don't do it for me. Personal thing, I understand that, but I have to say that off the bat. Something like Magic Circle, though, it's very like proto-heavy metal / classic rock vibe, like something rather enjoyable if that's what you're into, or in the mood for, I should say, and something I'm probably going to play for my wife. I think she'll like. But there's just a little bit of – there's a little black metal. There's a bunch of thrash. There's some weird progressive ambient things in Oranzi Pazuzu, which the name alone kind of, I think, speaks to – the weirdness of the band. There's just a variety of things to the point. The strangest thing on here, not quite sure where this came from, and I'd love to read about it in an interview or something, is Slasher Dave. So Slasher Dave was the front man of the band Acid Witch. So that explains the tie-in, but this is like a horror soundtrack type music. It's horror synth, something I enjoy. And as somebody that bought it notes, going to be a Halloween staple. Like, those things alone should tell you what it sounds like. does it belong? Sure, because that's what Dave wants to put out. So when he was asked that question about what your selection process is, and we've heard about this a lot, he said, quote, "I cast a wide net on 20 bucks bin. Not trying to be bestial black metal label, old school death metal label, alt noise sludge label, or traditional heavy metal label. That's boring to me. But I respect those who can live within such narrow parameters for their presentation. I'm not going to sign 15 bands that all wear hoodies and take photos in ossuaries. I like a lot of stuff in the heavy metal realm, so I release bands as different as Foreseen, Vandross, Vast, and blah, blah, blah. The bands on the label are representative of my personal music collection at home. If a band is cool and not out of my league, I go for it, just like with women. In both cases, I usually fail, but once in a while, it works out." And you could see that on just, again, going through the roster. One other thing that I think would make a kind of interesting side discussion, he notes previous to that statement, was, "I'm old in particular, and I still prefer to focus on repeated listening of a small group of albums than devouring everything that comes out, unlike my younger years, which were the opposite." It's something I'm sure Nick does too, struggle with a lot. Because when I go back to listen to old stuff, obviously I go to comfort, I'm using air quotes, comfort bands. The amount of melodic death I consume of the same bands is a lot, where I get to a point of like, I should at least switch up the albums I listen to. I have that
right
grouping of bands that are comfort stuff. But I also own a bazillion and two albums and try to we obviously consume a lot of new stuff. It's part of what we do here for the show. And finding the balance of what I want to go back and listen to of the new stuff to bands I love, which some of which are the newer ones, but there's the early 2000s stuff particularly that, you know, we were in college was the sweet spot. They're the ones I go back to. But out of the 4,691 albums in my iTunes library, I probably don't listen to 3,000 of those regularly right anyway.
I think that's fair. I mean, we have a lot. I think, honestly, it's going to take discontinuing doing this podcast before you or I get to look back at something and be like, huh, let's go look at something we listened to in the last decade that we don't go back to from before the show. Because that's a lot of yeah what it is.
So the problem with that is the same thing like when we were in college. We did the radio station, we got all this free new music. And it's something I couldn't let go of, which is what ended up mm-hmm leading to this podcast, really, was I just couldn't drop it. I need to know. It's the afraid you're going to miss something, like afraid of missing out, fear of missing out. I don't have that on social mm-hmm media. I have it with music. I have it with, what's this new band? Am I going to love it? Is it going to be the next big thing and I didn't get in on the ground floor? Like, it fucking matters. I know nobody right cares besides maybe Nick, but I can't let go of that, which is part of my own problem. But it's also something that helps fuel this show and the segments and stuff. And also, it's circular, right? Cyclical. That's also why I do the show, is because it helps me keep up on that stuff.
Right.
So it's funny that the guy running a label plays by the other set of rules. And again, the release list isn't, their signings aren't vast. Their release list isn't as stacked as something as you're going to see a Nuclear Blast or something like that. But that's true, though. He's going with a small subset of bands that he thinks are quality and sticks with them. Obviously, you got to sign new bands. But you look at some of those big ones right and you go, really? Why? And we've said this before. We've had discussions on that. Like, hey, how about instead of signing the new shit metalcore trend, why don't you invest in this band you signed 3 years ago that is way better? So it's cool to see a label doing that. So mm-hmm with that, this week we obviously played around with their catalog, listened to a whole bunch of things. We're going to play you something we both enjoyed from a couple years ago. The band is Dead Bird. One word. Which would make a fun tour with Immortal Bird because they're contradictory. Yep. They put out an album in 2018 called Three, The Forest Within the Tree. It's really good stoner doom. which speaks to both of us. So check out the song Alexandria.
All right, that was Alexandria from Dead Bird off his 20 Buck Spin, our Black Label selection for April. I know this technically is going up on March 30th, but...
Deal with it.
So we will do another one from them a little later in the month on the next episode. But we've got one more new release for you now. This one just came out. This is Zahn with Behold the Key. So this was the band, if you recall, from last year when we were doing our Bands Across America. This was our Z pick for that. And the guys reached out to us and sent us this album a little ahead of time so we could spend a week with it before reviewing and covering it. This is very good. So they are a mathcore grindy band, if you don't remember from our covering them before. This is the band that my dad got in the car and drove away from me when I was stuck on a ladder, and it just started blasting in his ears, and he hated it, and it was wonderful. This is that band, and that will forever be imprinted on me when I listen to them, which only gets better because they've gotten bigger, better, and heavier on Behold the Key. The production is better. The songwriting is a little more interesting and diverse. There's still that humor that you get with, like, you know, asshole Freebird guy from the first album. You now get Wedding Gazebo Placebo that starts with them, like, you know, mouthing what the guitar riff is going to be when it comes in. Like, there's still this levity to it, which is wonderful, because otherwise this is just a dense, heavy, hard, fast listen. And having a little bit of humor, a little bit of tongue-in-cheek attitude towards it is very helpful in keeping it engaging and fun. This is really good. This is a step up across the board from the previous album.
Yeah. And keeping with the fun of it, you can actually understand some of the lyrics. So like for His Own Good, the song His Own Good, like the lyrics in that show to the levity, obviously Wedding Gazebo Placebo, which is just fun to say. This is insane though. They do a fantastic job of this, the combination of mathcore and grindcore, which obviously can easily play into each other. Though I feel as in some more intense ones we've done in the past, you don't get as much of the math as you do the grind, or it's a different style of grind. This does both equally and equally well. And it's deceiving when you look at this artwork, which is gorgeous, by the way.
Yeah, well done, guys.
You'd expect, as Nick said, something in the cynic realm, something very spacey, progressive death, maybe. And that is, when you hit play, that is not at all what you fucking get. Though I can see the frenetic energy connection, though, between the artwork and the sound. And it's good. There's enough levity, not just in the tone of the overall tone of the album, but in where they settle in on a groove, where they repeat a chorus or something. And it allows you to get into the album, because a lot of things of this style just plow through and you're just like, okay, that was intense, but I don't remember it.
Am I going back?
This you will go back, and this you will remember.
Yeah. Yeah, this was a lot of fun. I continue to enjoy this band and the direction they're going and the evolution they're taking, and I'm definitely in for the ride. And as you said, the balance of math and grind on here is really, really well done, because you can't have 4-minute songs that are just grinding. it would get way too much. You know, like, and all of these songs are, you know, most in the 3-minute plus range. And that's a lot for just grind. So working that math element in, I would say if anything, this leans a little heavier on that, with like a grind attitude and influence. But it works really, really well. The balance, the trade-off is all there. The production is crisp and polished and very easy to get into.
And a lot of vocal variety. Between the lead vocalist and what seems to be backup vocals, there's a range of vocal patterns and sounds on here, which play to the what's going on. It's great. It's great. The 4.
Yep. I like it a lot. This is a solid 4 for me. This is really, really good. So thank you guys for sharing. This is definitely one that all of you should go check out. And that is going to do it for us for episode 412 on the Inside Show podcast. I like that joke you made, Brian. That's very good. I'm going to stick with that until we're all allowed to go outside again. So that's going to do it. I think we might need to look at what we're covering next week, because I think a couple of those albums got pushed. So we have to go figure that out. In the meantime, feel free to go leave us a review over on iTunes. Feel free to comment on what you thought of anything we covered. Give us suggestions for future labels to cover, as we've mentioned numerous times. That is going to do it. We are going to leave you with Killjoy from Zan's latest, Behold the Key. We will see you in 2 weeks for episode 413.